Philip of Macedonia. Philip's campaigning from 351 to 349 BCE. Now, by the autumn of 352 BCE, Philip was campaigning in Thrace. Now, the alliances had shifted amongst the Thracian tribes and leaders, as they so often did. Philip, like everyone else, switched whenever it seemed to be in his best interest. Therefore, in a reversal of his previous year, he was on good terms with King Emmerdocus, possibly the son and successor of the earlier king of the same name, who had been an enemy, and fighting against Celobrides. In November, news reached Athens that he was not far from the Dardanelles, besieging a Thracian stronghold called Herulion Techos, whose precise location is unknown. The Athenians, dependent on the grain from the Black Sea, and nervous about Chares's success in the area, was about to be undone. They voted to send 40 triremes, manned with citizens up to the age of 45, and to introduce a special tax to raise 60 talents needed to fund the operation. Campaigns in the winter were never undertaken lightly, and this was a significant force, indicative of the Athenian concern. Then, before the expedition was ready, news arrived saying that Philip was seriously ill. Soon afterwards, another report claimed that he was dead. Mightily relieved, and thus all the more eager to believe such good tidings, the Athenians canceled the operations as well as the tax. But Philip was not dead, although it does look as if he fell seriously ill, for the campaign in Thrace ended indecisively in 352 BCE, and he seems not to have returned there for several years. He was 30 or a little more, but even the young sometimes die of disease, and aggressive leaders like the king most certainly could fall in battle. The reports of his real illness and even the false story of his death reminded everyone that he was a mortal, just as the defeat of Idaeus and the far more serious personal defeat in Thessaly showed that he was fallible. A world without Philip was a recent memory, as it was a Macedonian crippled by internal struggles. For the moment, he was successful and strong enough to prompt jealousy and suspicion in his neighbors, without being so invincible that he was obviously too strong to challenge. If Philip died, then all his gains might rapidly wither. His closest adult relations were his two exiled half-brothers, who were bound to face a hard struggle if they tried to become king. Nothing definite is known about Philip's activity from 351 and 350 BCE, but this background of doubt may hold the key. A little later, the Athenian orator Demosthenes mentions campaigns against Illyrians and Paeonians and King Arabus, and in the earlier speech claimed that Philip was building fortresses in Illyria. Although each is an aside, offering no detail whatsoever or any precise date, they fit best at this time. Plenty of leaders resented being forced to submit to Philip, since for the Greeks and war leaders elsewhere, acknowledging the greater power of someone else was a constant irritation, sometimes necessary and occasionally made palatable by tradition or even personal charm. Former enemies and allies alike were bound to wonder whether Philip was about to fall, and if he did, then it was always better to make new friends earlier rather than later. The assertions of independence on the part of some Illyrian and Paeonian leaders is highly likely in the circumstances, leading to raiding. Philip had to respond promptly and forcefully if the contagion was not to spread. With nothing to go on, we really cannot say how serious and hard-fought the resulting campaigns were, and we should be wary of dismissing them as minor simply because they failed to draw the attention of our Greek sources. A little more is known about affairs in Epirus, ruled by King Arabus of the Molossians, the uncle of Philip's wife, Olympias. There may not have been any actual fighting, and instead merely a demonstration of the strength of the Macedonian army and its ability to march at will into Epirus. Olympias' younger brother, Alexander of Epirus, went with Philip and the army when it returned home. Arabus remained on the throne, but one side of Macedonian dominance is that for the moment the Molossians stopped minting their own coinage and used Philip's currency instead. Alexander of Epirus stayed at Pella, or wherever the Macedonian court happened to be, and almost inevitably there were rumors that the boy was seduced by Philip. What mattered for the moment was that Arabus had not only received a sharp reminder of Macedonian power, but also, from now on, that Philip had a replacement for him on hand if he chose to back the claim of Olympias' brother. As we have seen, Philip's two half-brothers had been offered a welcome by the city of Olynthus, the head of the Chalcidian League. This was provocative, and much like the League's ongoing flirtation with Athens, was meant as a clear signal to Philip not to take the Olynthians for granted, for they were wealthy, reasonably powerful, and had other options for allies. More than likely, these actions reflected the rise in domestic politics of men who were rivals of those who had favored Philip, and they naturally adopted an assertive pose to emphasize that they were different and would lead their city and the League to better things. In response, Philip seems to have made a demonstration of force on their borders in 351 BCE, though like his dealings with the Melusians, this stopped short of actual war. Any impression this made was temporary, for tension continued to build, and international relations in the Greek world were generally shaped by bickering, self-interest, and very short memories, so perhaps there was an inevitability about what followed. The Chalcidian League had come to fear Philip more than any other state, while he in turn no longer needed to be at peace with them and was confident of his own strength. We do not hear of direct provocation on his part, nor is there any sign of reluctance. And by 349 BCE, Philip and the Chalcidian League were back at war once again. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question. Leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.